Welcome to Rethink, a podcast on the future of the skilled nursing industry. I'm Jack Silverstein of Skilled Nursing News, and joining me today are two guests, Amy Kazak, Curana Health's Executive Vice President of Strategic Initiatives, and Armando Guzman, Chief Population Health Officer for Cantex. In this interview, Armando, Amy, and I discuss all things value-based care, exploring the benefits for operators, the wins that Cantex has seen in its partnership with Curana, and why operators who think of value-based care as something in the future need to realize that with VBC, the opposite is likely true. They're probably already in it. One show note, if you subscribe to the Rethink podcast directly through SoundCloud, a change that we've recently made in our infrastructure could affect your subscription. We apologize for the inconvenience and encourage you to subscribe through a podcast player such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Now, on to our show. Amy, Armando, thank you both so much for joining us here today. Let's start with you. Amy, can you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about Curana Health and how Curana is working today with skilled nursing operators?
Hi, Jack. Thank you so much for the opportunity today. I'm excited to be here with Armando. So I'm Amy Kazak, an Executive Vice President with Curana Health. I've been a part of Curana Health since we started as a company, and I started working with SNFs in 2012. My background is in designing value-based care programs and provider-payer alignments, and I've had the privilege of working across multiple innovative healthcare organizations for about 25 years, maybe a little longer at this point. At Curana Health, for those of you who don't know who we are, our mission is to improve the health, happiness, and dignity of skilled nursing and senior living residents. And we do this in two very specific ways. Firstly, we bring in trained, engaged, physician-led care teams into skilled nursing centers. We provide medical director services, post-acute care, behavioral health, and primary care for residents. So all the things that can directly improve access to needed care and also that support our SNF partners. Secondly, we use our value-based care models, so accountable care organizations and Medicare Advantage special needs plans, to improve the patient care experience and, very importantly to our conversation today, to align financial incentives for SNF operators and other care partners. SNF operators can participate in our accountable care organizations where they can be eligible for shared savings based on their support of care coordination efforts. And they can also participate in our Medicare Advantage special needs plans to make them available to their patients, but also to make them a part of their long-term care strategy. Some of our partners, like Cantex, have actually decided that value-based care is such an important part of their strategy that they should actually become the Medicare Advantage payer. So we support that model as well. And that's what we do. We bring in care, we use ACOs and MA plans so that together with our SNF operators, we can create a better care model and really better life experience for SNF residents. And again, I love that Armando is here with me from Cantex Continuing Care because Cantex is such a great example of an organization that I think has really fully embraced value-based care and used their Medicare Advantage plan, ProCare Advantage, to support both the growth of their care models, but also their ancillary service lines.
Absolutely, Amy. Jack, thanks for having us on. So my name is Armando Guzman. I'm the Chief Population Health Officer for Cantex Continuing Care Network. We historically were known as a skilled nursing company. We are now, best position us as a continuum of care, family owned for the last 49 years, soon to be 50, same stable ownership for a while, Texas based, with some Canadian roots. We have pharmacy, hospice, home health, a medical group, an ISNP plan that Amy referenced, and then also our own rehab company. And our core business has always historically been our 39 nursing homes. Value-based care is just in everything we do. Being innovative and not being risk averse is typically in your residents' best interest and also for you as an organization. So where we look at value-based care is we're in a space that's so regulated. We figure the best way if we're going to be accountable for the patient's outcome at the end is as much control as possible. So we may have some folks listening to the podcast today that are kind of on the risk side and think doing more exposes you to more. We take the complete opposite lens at Cantex. We think doing more is the best way to really improve outcomes, have everybody rowing in the same direction. And we as a company have really just gone all in with value-based care, the way Amy said. If there's something innovative to try, we try it. We have run our own iSNP plan in partnership with Curana for the last 6 years. And we are recently executing our ACO strategy, which is taking form this year and flowing into a strong 2026. Additionally, we've had a couple CSNP chronic special needs plans that launched this year. So we're all about it, for lack of a better word. Healthcare is very transactional. Value-based care is really the pool of money that rewards good outcomes and actually wellness for the patients. If you're doing a better job in care delivery, you should be paid accordingly. And that's really our stance on VBC. So we definitely see where the government's going and regulators are going, and we want to be first in line rather than chasing ghosts after the fact.
Thank you, Armando. And Amy, I really appreciate the way that you introduced Armando and the way that you introduced Cantex, because as I've gotten to know Curana over the years, I found that it's a really valuable way to understand Curana is by understanding its partners and understanding who you work with, what that relationship is, what it is like. I think that's a really useful way for our listeners to understand Curana. So I'd like to ask you, why is it so important for operators to consider value-based care solutions, such as an institutional special needs plan and accountable care organizations, specifically in today's skilled nursing landscape?
So right off the bat, Jack, I think it's important to note that SNF operators are already participating in value-based care, whether they know it or not. So PDPM, our patient-driven payment model, is a value-based payment model. It was implemented to improve payment accuracy and appropriateness, and it focuses on the needs of the whole patient rather than just the volume of services provided. Armando, you said it exactly right. Our current system is a transactional system when it comes for paying for healthcare services. So we're all thinking about how do we shift away from it just being a transaction and really focusing on that value. So CMS has already started building value into their core payments like PDPM. And then, of course, both CMS and most state Medicaid programs have quality programs. All of these are designed to improve outcomes and not just make payment solely on the number of services provided. In fact, if you think about it, quality measures like return to acute actually reward providers when avoidable or unnecessary services don't happen. And I think that is just really key to understanding this model. It's not about limiting services. It's about payment for the right services, the ones that are preventing bad things from happening to the residents that we're all taking care of. So I think for me, the question really isn't whether SNFs should be participating in value-based care, because they already are. The question is how to take the next step and get the most out of it for your residents, but also your long-term strategy. And I think that's where iSNPs, CSNPs, DSNPs, and ACOs can all come in, because they're all tools to really align financial incentives and reward operators for reducing hospitalizations, preventable exacerbations of conditions, and improving care coordination to support residents with a more proactive care model.
I think that's probably the biggest takeaway I always have on this. So I love hearing Amy say that is you're already in value-based care. I think that's really important to know. And really all these programs, what they do is they give you a further lens into your organization. If you are a provider that is heavy on substance abuse and behavioral issues and you're serving that community that might have low therapy needs, right? In the old system, your goals were aligned with putting that person through a treadmill, having them work out, get a lot of PT, OT, ST, things that might not be relevant to what's going on with them. The government is shifting with us in a good way where they're saying, hey, your case mix is a bit different. You serve a different population. You are unique. And here's how the reimbursement's going to mimic that. Going further in that direction is simply going to align you with not only where the government's going, but also financial success. In this new world, there's nothing to be shameful of if you are actually making additional margin for your organization while doing something that's right for the member. One of the things that really was an impetus for us to get into this space from our ownership when we first talked to Curon a while back is we never had the funds as a skilled nursing organization to afford employing nurse practitioners. We all anecdotally believed having an NP in the building is a good thing. Why would we not want a higher educated RN to supplement what we're already doing in our nursing homes? The only mechanism we found was having our own ISNP plan. There was prepaid dollars where we're investing it in the residents we're serving, and we can add more tools at our disposal. So I think really that's where, from a financial perspective, as well as patient outcomes, this is the future where both things can be rowing in the same direction. And it can offer an operator a chance to step back and say, okay, we now know what we are going to be paid in this, let's say this space, this demonstration program, this ISNP. From those funds, what is the best clinical program we can put in place for these residents that we're serving? And you can make decisions based on your case mix. Not everybody's the same. We have homes of ours that are highly transitional, right? Short-term. We have three facilities now that have a memory care unit, a little more long-term population. Having these funding mechanisms to allow you to invest in your infrastructure and do innovative things is honestly the way to go. And I have to go back to what Amy said. If you're listening to this and you think you're so far away from value-based care, you're actually not. If you're doing a good job understanding PDPM, changes in that landscape, documentation, capturing acuity, you're further along than you even think you are. And there's people to talk to in the space.
So Armando, those very specific examples that you just gave, this is what makes me so excited about value-based care and especially our ISNP Medicare Advantage plan models. We're helping the model actually work long-term for residents who need care the most. And this leads me to one of my favorite topics around value-based care, which is capitation. And I know a lot of operators hear capitation and they say, it doesn't work with our model. You can't see me right now, but I am smiling because when used correctly and when payment rates are set appropriately, cap is the most powerful tool you have to align financial incentives and support preventive care. Doesn't work for specialists and everybody, but for preventive care, which I would argue for your long-term care residents, that's what we're all trying to do, is keep them with the highest quality of life for as long as possible. So operators who are part of an institutional special needs plan, who participate, or other Medicare Advantage plans, this is not unique to ISNPs, they can receive payments for Part A and Part B services under this capitation, a monthly fee. I think of it as a monthly allowance for care for every member in your building. When done correctly and appropriately, this would be a game changer for how you think about margin and opportunity around your long stay residents.
That is incredible. And this has been so fascinating for me. Armando, I loved what you said about this is the future, but you both are making the point that it's also maybe the not just the present, but in some regards, the unknown present, in the sense that there might be people who think that this is in the future and it's actually right here and something that they need to pay attention to. Let's really take a moment to spell out the benefits for operators of value-based care. How do these programs and models that we're talking about, ISNPs, ACOs, et cetera, how do they help support financial stability, specifically on the long-term care side of SNPs? Really break it down for us.
I think predictability is probably the biggest tool on capitation and these type of things. You can better budget, you can better have predictability, less volatility, and honestly, add to your bottom line as people have healthier outcomes. If you invest in early detection, advanced care planning, those type of things, you're booking all that as margin while you're actually investing in people having a wellness plan versus a sickness plan. That's honestly the best way to say it in terms of the financial outcomes. And then also another thing, Jack, on specifics is if you have a banner year where people are healthy, your programs are working great, that money has to be repurposed to either member benefits, which is good for your residents, or back to your own facilities. We honestly see it as the lifeline as things continue to progress. And we've had phenomenal years where you're talking about hundreds of thousands, millions going back to your facilities and investing in that infrastructure.
Yeah. And as excited as I get about capitation and as well as it has worked for Cantex, I do just want to stress that capitation is not a requirement for participating with value-based care. In fact, in ACOs today, not usually an option for SNFs to get paid that way, but it's important for operators to understand the opportunities and why having the ability to start changing the payment model to better match what we want out of the system. It's so important, not just for patients, but also, again, for long-term sustainability. I think the other thing here is beyond, you know, talking about, okay, whether you get paid cap or fee-for-service and maybe quality incentives, whatever the model is around value-based care, the infrastructure that you put in place to make your value-based care programs successful. Same infrastructure that is going to make you successful in your short stay residents. So if you're focusing on your long stay residents who are really the primary target for whether it's the ISNP model or the ACO model, your short stay residents and your staff are going to benefit from things on the documentation side. Value-based providers, we have to accurately risk profile every member that's in the plan or in the ACO so that we get paid appropriately, but also so we can provide the right services. Well, that can translate to earlier detection of your short stay residents who might be at risk for going to the hospital or for a return to acute. That documentation can support your MDS coordinator when they are working to code accurately for those short stay PDPM payments. It can help with your overall quality metrics. So I would just say that there is definitely a halo effect. And any partner of ours, and you can talk to Armando directly about this, they are going to tell you that they have seen all of these things improve. In fact, this year for 2025, 100% of the AHCA NCAL Gold quality awardees were all participating with Curana Health and one of our value-based payment programs. And I'm not gonna say that, hey, we were solely responsible because every single person in that community and building put in a whole lot of time and energy to make that gold happen. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it supports the premise that doing the right thing for this set of patients is going to help you do the right thing for all of your patients.
Absolutely. It's like there's a trickle-down effect, right? You're going to find things that were blind spots because you wouldn't have even known. You will find that you have better conversations with your ancillary partners that are in your buildings, right? Now that you know what their model's like, are they aligned in goals? Is your behavioral health partner, is your wound care partner aligned? Because you don't have a lot of that data. On your long-termers, typically, stuff is going out to Part B. If it's not on a short-term stay, you're not being invoiced for it, it can be a blind spot. We have had so many things where we just open up our eyes to what's going on in the entire building. And I think that's very important, what Amy said. It is not necessarily just your subpopulation on the ISNP. It's, can we take best practices we're learning from that subset and implement them to impact RTAs, quality metrics, you know, antipsychotic measures? Absolutely. Can we have better conversations? Absolutely. So I think it just really gives you full visibility to what's going on in your facilities. on a 360 level. You should know what's going on in your facilities clinically, right? If you're a sound operator, you won't know a lot of the ancillary parts on what's going on there. And this is just a better way for you to have a full lens on everything that is impacting your residents' care.
Armando, I want to hear what specific wins has Cantex experienced as a result of value-based care models? Because I know it helps me, and I'm sure it'll help our listeners. What can you tell us there?
So we've had years of multi-million dollar shared savings opportunities, value-based true dollars that would have never flown into our organization that's flowed back to our facilities, right? Number one, let's just start there, is we're getting paid for good outcomes, which is a theme we've hit on a couple times. But outside of that, so many things, Jack. So early on in the discussion, I talked about this became a funding mechanism to us having our own NP company. Not to bore the audience with Texas specific, but we have telehealth requirements here for Quip after hours, telehealth coverage. Through our model and our NP model, we found out that we can actually play in this space, do well in this space, meet the requirements, and not employ a third party vendor to do these things, right? So another specific win is, as we learned how to be a medical practice group to support our ISNP, we've learned that we can add a lot more skills to our organization overall, whether it be for after hours telecoverage. Can we do behavioral health? Can we dabble in these things? So I think learning how to be a better clinical organization has been a huge step in the right direction in terms of a tangible win. We have increased staffing hours, which is good for patient care. Also, one thing that resonated that Amy mentioned earlier is impacting the short-termers. We've learned, hey, you know what? If somebody is sick and they're a short-termer that isn't part of the ISNP, right? And the doctor happens to not be there that day. The historical models were calling that doctors after hours, nobody answers, sending them out to the hospital. If we now have our own employed NP there, we're able to say, hey, I know this is not one of your patients, but can you check this person out? Is there something we can treat now in place, improve their outcomes? So I think, honestly, just learning has been the biggest thing for us, Jack, is we learn to be a stronger organization. That trickle-down effect, nursing care should be better, and additional dollars. We've had significant additional dollars over our years in our program, which is definitely a lifeline. Texas is one of the lowest reimbursed states. So everything we can do while providing good care is appreciated here in the market.
Perfect. This has been amazing. And I want to thank you both for being with us today. You've just shared so much. To close us out, what is your message to operators who are considering value-based care, especially in light of what you both said, that you're already kind of in it, you're already here?
Amy, I can go first on that. Jack, I say speak to people. Seeking counsel is always a good thing, right? Everybody that's listening right now, just know you have a lot more leverage. You are important to all these partners out there. The organizations ultimately are growing through the partnership with you. So know your value in that conversation, be able to dictate terms, ask difficult questions, talk to your peers, but really know your value. It is your backyard. You know those residents better than anybody. Speak openly with your peers. Find out what's working. In value-based care, you typically are not competing with your peers. And I think that is a very important thing for the audience to hear.
Armando, I think you hit on good points there, but let me just reiterate a couple of things. The first one is, I completely agree, as SNF operators, know your value. If you are not getting paid for the value you are creating for your long-term care residents, guess what? Somebody else is. So be proactive, talk to your peers, and find a partner. Because my number one message is, once you've incorporated one value-based care model or solution, it gets easier to implement more. The models build on each other. So if you're already focused on documentation accuracy or reducing unnecessary hospitalizations, that's great. You're setting yourselves up for success with other models. And by the way, you don't have to jump straight into the deep end. You can if you want to, and we'll hold your hand, but you don't have to. You can step this. So maybe you start with an ACO model that just pays you for creating better outcomes and you don't have downside risk. The real question is, how far do you want to go and what kind of support do you need along the way? And that's where the right partner is so important. So overall, I'd encourage operators not to think of value-based care integration as a huge leap, but really as a series of steps. Each one makes the next easier, And together they can create a foundation for healthier residents, greater financial and operational stability, and I think really give you strategy for long-term sustainability.
Incredible. Well, you know what? I'm going to put you on the spot here. Where can people reach you both if they want to continue these conversations?
We're pretty easy to find. So I know Amy's got an active LinkedIn. I do as well. I'm easy to reach. Email, it's aguzman@cantechcc.com. That's always best. But we're at many conferences now. We're pretty easy to find.
Yep. You can reach me at amy.kazak. So that's K-A-S-Z-A-K at curanahealth.com. You can find me on LinkedIn and you will see Curana Health out at a lot of the conferences, conventions, both regional and national. So we look forward to connecting with you.
That is amazing. Amy, Armando, thank you so much for your time today.
A big thank you to our two guests, Amy Kazak of Curana Health and Armando Guzman of Cantex. Thank you to them for joining the Rethink podcast from Skilled Nursing News. To hear more episodes, visit skillednursingnews.com/podcast. And again, one more reminder. If you subscribe to the podcast directly through SoundCloud, a change that we've recently made could affect your subscription. We apologize for the inconvenience and encourage you to subscribe through a podcast player such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts.